This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today is Budget Day in the state of Connecticut. After several weeks of sharing bits and pieces about his budget proposal, Governor Daniel Malloy released his full plan and delivered his third budget address of his administration. This evening, Where We Live, a special edition of our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. Coming up later, regular Wheelhouse panelist Colin McEnroe joins me, along with Jeff Cohen and Harriet Jones. They've been breaking down some of the governor's proposals. But before we hear from them, let's listen to Governor Malloy's budget address delivered to the legislature at the state capitol earlier today.
For a small state, Connecticut is a place of stark contrast and unique diversity. We are home to historic and vibrant urban centers, but also to scenic small towns, parks, and forests that are the envy of our nation. Our economy relies on a backbone of large employers that have sustained us for generations. And yet the same economy would crumble if not for a network of small businesses that showcase the ingenuity and spirit of Connecticut workers. Our industrial centers are helping make global advances in aerospace, bioscience, and precision manufacturing. At the same time, some 400,000 acres of local farmland support more than 27,000 Connecticut jobs. These contracts are found throughout our great state. They demonstrate our rich history and our distinct character. They make us who we are. And working together in recent years, we have crafted budgets that capitalize on these unique Connecticut assets. We protected state aid for cities and towns. At the same time, we created a new state park and preserved nearly 11,000 acres of additional open space. We worked to attract and retain large employers. At the same time, we created the state's first program to help small businesses. We made targeted investments in burgeoning high-tech industries at the same time that we began to restore over 1,000 acres of overgrown farmland. The budget I present to you today continues to build on Connecticut's diversity and its unique strengths. It also turns our attention to some other areas of contrast, some things that we need to address together. As we begin this legislative session, as we look ahead to the difficult work of negotiating a budget, we should do so with these contrasts in mind. Together, we should focus on our strengths and also shore up our weaknesses. We should plan for long-term prosperity while also addressing short-term problems. We should continue to build a better tomorrow by making smart choices. Of course, making smart choices usually means making tough choices. The budget I present you today is filled with tough choices. All told, my proposal contains more than $590 million in cuts to current services budget. The vast majority of these cuts are choices that, under ideal circumstances, Connecticut would not have to make. But as our economy continues to recover, tough choices are needed if we want to achieve the following simple goals. First, we must balance our budget by living within our means and living within our spending cap. This budget does that, with a total increase of just 3.1% from the prior fiscal year. This increase is in line with the responsible growth seen over the last 4 years, and it's far below the 5 years prior to that, when spending grew at an average of 4.2%. Second, we must maintain our commitment to funding public education. While other states may choose to balance their budgets on the backs of public schools, Connecticut will not. My proposal supports schools by maintaining current ECS funding levels. Third, Connecticut must keep its promises to cities and towns. This budget continues to fund municipal aid so that we can hold down local property taxes and so that no teacher, no policeman, no fireman will be laid off because state government failed to do its part. Fourth and finally, even in this time of difficult choices, we must not ask any more of our middle class. Today, I am proposing that we overhaul Connecticut's sales tax, moving it to under 6% for the first time since 1971. We We can pay for this by simplifying our tax code, removing some exemptions, and by reining in loopholes and corporate tax credits. The hardworking members of our middle class have helped turn our economy around. They've pitched in and they've shared in the sacrifice. Let's now give them something back. These four goals represent the framework of the budget I submit to you today. As we negotiate in the months ahead, I look forward to hearing your ideas on how we can improve upon it. But there are a few things I will not do. I will not support any effort to exceed our spending cap by emergency declaration. I will not support an early retirement incentive, an idea that may save us money now, but costs us much, much more in the long run. And I will not sign a budget that is balanced on the backs of our towns or our public schools, period. Within this framework, I will listen to anyone who has serious ideas on how we can make this budget better. If you're willing to offer detailed proposals for saving money and growing our economy, you will be heard. But if it's just about partisan gamesmanship, I'm not interested, and I don't think Connecticut families are interested either. The reason we need to work together is simple. Connecticut's economy is headed in the right direction, and the best way to keep our momentum is a collective effort. Now, we are on the right path. We know our strategy for economic development is working. This is not a partisan spin. The facts tell us that Connecticut's economy is finally back on track. Since 2011, our unemployment rate has dropped from a high of 9.1% down to 6.4% today. In 2014, we created more than 26,000 new jobs, our best job growth since 1998. And all told, our private sector has grown more than 75,000 jobs over the last 4 years, regaining 94% of the jobs lost in the Great Recession. We need to keep this momentum going. We can do it by supporting the good programs and policies that have brought us this far. This budget continues to help small businesses grow jobs by fully funding our successful Small Business Express program. And it focuses on growing jobs in higher unemployment areas by assisting more businesses in urban centers. We don't have to stop there. Just as we are helping middle-class families, we can help small businesses as well. By restructuring our business tax code and bringing it more in line with other states, we can do away with the business entity tax, which unfairly impacts small employers. My budget eliminates it this year. This year. As we continue to create jobs, we also need to make sure we're growing the next generation of Connecticut workers. And in recent years, we've done great work to bolster our public schools. Together, we've made year-over-year increases to school funding. And we've done it while other states have slashed their educational budgets. Our schools are better for our efforts. Graduation rates have increased 3.7% in the last 4 years. Connecticut students are leading nationally in reading and math. And we're finally making real progress on closing our achievement gap. The support we've offered schools is the right thing to do for our kids and for their future. But it also helps prepare more kids to one day build our workforce and our economy. Now, we can continue our good work by filling in some of the small cracks that too many students can still slip through. To that end, I want to offer a few relatively small changes that can have a big impact. Let's start with our youngest kids. Now, I am proud that last year we began the important work of moving Connecticut towards universal pre-kindergarten. But ironically, even when our kids get a full day pre-K experience, some of them are still graduating into kindergarten programs that only teaches them for half a day. It does not make sense. The bill I submit to you today ensures that by the fall of 2017, every child in Connecticut will receive a full day kindergarten experience. Over the next 2 years, we'll work with towns that don't yet offer full-day kindergarten. We'll make sure all of our youngsters receive the time they need to learn and reach their full potential right from the moment they enter elementary school. Now, moving from one end of the education spectrum to another, we also need to make sure that when Connecticut students graduate from our colleges, they can afford to pay off their loans. For too many students, loan debt is an anchor that drags them down, hindering their choices and putting the American dream out of reach. We can help by enabling Connecticut's Higher Education Student Loan Authority to refinance the loans of state residents. Together, we can help Connecticut students become productive members of our economy and our workforce. The bill I submit to you today makes student loans more affordable, and I urge you to support it. Now let's talk about another way that we can help our economy continue to grow. A way to give more people a chance at finding gainful employment. A way to address a systemic wrong that has plagued our country, our state, and our economy for generations. Now, throughout American history, one of the unifying themes that has bound us together is that of a second chance. But somewhere along the way, we lost sight of this simple principle. Too often, we became a society that sought permanent punishment instead of permanent reform. We built modern prisons when we should have been building modern schools. From 1985 to 2008, our prison population tripled in size. We created a generation of offenders who had no chance at a better life when they got out of prison, no chance at a higher education, no chance at a good-paying job or affordable housing. Connecticut can do better than this. Now, over the last 4 years, we've started to change and make changes. We implemented reforms to our juvenile justice system. We decriminalized marijuana, resulting in 6,000 fewer arrests every year. We refocused on community policing, bolstering confidence in our big city police departments. We targeted violent offenders in our communities, putting them away for longer stretches of time. And thanks to the bipartisan efforts of this General Assembly, we took dangerous guns and ammunition off our streets with the strongest gun violence prevention law in the country. Today, we can say with confidence that these reforms are working. Crime is at a 48-year low. Violent crime is down 36%. Homicides in urban centers like New Haven, Bridgeport, and Hartford have dropped 48% since 2011. Connecticut is proving that smart criminal justice reforms can lead to safer communities, fewer victims, and more opportunity for success. The bill I submit to you today offers a second chance to nonviolent offenders. It reduces penalties for simple drug possession to a misdemeanor. It unties the hands of our judges by eliminating mandatory minimums. It streamlines our pardon and paroles process for nonviolent offenders. And it offers ex-offenders new opportunities in finding both a job and a good home. Together, we can give nonviolent offenders a second chance to be productive members of our community and our economy. Now, I know that some will be critical of these proposals, but the truth is that these are not Democratic ideas or Republican ideas. These ideas are part of a growing national conversation on how to end a generational cycle of poverty, addiction, and crime. The kind of reforms I'm proposing are already happening from Texas to California and from Mississippi to Washington, D.C. Connecticut should be a leader in this national debate. Together, let's help more of our neighbors rejoin their families, rejoin their communities, and rejoin Connecticut's growing economy. Let's give them a second chance.
That's Governor Daniel Malloy delivering his budget address to the legislature earlier today at the Capitol. It's a special edition of our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. When we come back, we'll hear the rest of the governor's speech. He'll lay out some of his transportation plans. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. It's a special edition of our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. Coming up, we'll discuss the newly released state budget with several WNPR reporters. But first, let's listen to the rest of Governor Dan Malloy's budget speech to lawmakers at the state capitol earlier today.
I want to finish today by continuing a conversation we began a little over a month ago when I joined you in this chamber and we spoke about our transportation infrastructure. About how Connecticut's economic future and our ability to grow jobs are tied directly to the condition of our roads, bridges and ports, buses and rails, even to our walkways and our bikeways. In the intervening weeks since then, the Department of Transportation, the Office of Policy and Management, and staff in my office have been hard at work developing a new transportation vision for the next 30 years. It's based on the input of hundreds of state residents, business groups, and stakeholders. That document is available to you today as part of this budget. It is designed to give you a better understanding of what a best-in-class transportation system looks like, of what it could mean for Connecticut both in terms of economic development and a better quality of life. It includes a complete overview of the projects Connecticut could undertake over the next 3 decades. That's a long time. So the question is, where do we start? Included in the capital budget that I have proposed today is a plan for ramping up our efforts over the next 5 years. Now, last month I promised I would return to you with more details. Well, here they are. We can begin with our roads. There are 12 million individual trips taken on Connecticut roads each and every day. Our roads are relied on by companies to ship their goods and transport their employees to work. Right now, those commuters are each spending an extra 40 hours a year in traffic due to unnecessary congestion. That's an extra full-time week of work every year sitting in traffic. And for our economy, these delays cost us $4.2 billion every year. That is a hidden tax on Connecticut citizens. Even as we invest in alternative modes of transportation, making our highways work better has to be part of our strategy. Just a few hundred feet from here, Hartford's I-84 viaduct has reached the end of its useful life. It routinely demands significant investment to stay in good repair, and the repairs usually cause additional traffic problems. Fixing the viaduct will reduce congestion on I-84. At the same time, it reshapes Hartford's neighborhoods, communities that were devastated by the construction of the original interstate so many years ago. My capital budget moves this project forward. Also, in the Capital Region, we need to fix the Charter Oak Bridge over the Connecticut River. Because of its deficiencies, cars and trucks routinely back up into the travel lanes, posing a safety concern and causing more than 85 accidents every year. Fixing this bridge will not only eliminate delays, it will generate $860 million in new economic activity. My plan will expedite this project as well and make these changes a reality. Heading south of Hartford to the city of Middletown, we have to acknowledge that it was cut off from its historic waterway nearly 60 years ago with the construction of Route 9. This corridor has long been a congestion point and a source of frustration for drivers. Providing safer, less congested highway, as well as easier access to the riverfront, can dramatically reshape Middletown. My proposal gets these changes started with design and engineering work. Heading west to Waterbury, studies have shown that we need to replace the aging interchange of Route 8 and I-84, known as the Mixmaster. Getting it done will mean positive change for entire neighborhoods near the Naugatuck River, as well as safer and less stressful commute through one of the most notorious interchanges in all of New England. This proposal gets us started on a complete replacement of the Mixmaster. Continuing further down west to Danbury. There we got somebody in the house. Butler. Continuing further west to Danbury, there's a 5-mile stretch of I-84 between exit 3 and 8 that continues to experience significant and unacceptable congestion. By alleviating this congestion, we can reduce air pollution, decrease traffic, and make the Danbury region a more attractive place for commerce. My budget begins the necessary work for fixing this corridor, including additional lanes and reconfigured access points. In Fairfield County, it would be a gross understatement to say that the stretch of I-95 between Bridgeport and Greenwich experiences significant traffic congestion. Every day during rush hour, commuters spend, and this is conservative, I can assure you, spend between 20 and 40 minutes in unneeded delays on that stretch of highway. Additional lanes and new access points are needed to open up this vital access to New York and beyond. This budget gets that work started as well. In the same region, my proposal also includes funding to fix Merritt Parkway interchange at Route 7 in Norwalk. Currently, too many drivers are forced to get off the highway in order to navigate between two roads, leading to unnecessary traffic and accidents. Together, we can free up capacity on both state and local roads. My budget includes funding to begin that important work as well. And where's Duff? There he is. And finally, we have road work to do in eastern Connecticut as well. The stretch of I-95 from Old Saybrook to New London is in need of congestion mitigation and safety improvements. Our state has talked about this problem for decades, but we've never started the long process of actually fixing it. My proposal gets us started. As part of upgrading the highway in this part of the state, we also need to begin the necessary work to widen I-95 and fix the interchange connecting it to I-395. Here again, we have a major bottleneck and safety hazard that should have been fixed years ago, decades ago. Under my plan, we get started. This change is also a critical piece of extending Route 11, another project that continues to move forward under this proposal. We can also begin much-needed improvements to the Gold Star Bridge. The bridge was built in the 1940s and now requires substantial investment to align it with modern standards. With this budget, we can fix this critical piece of our economy in southeastern Connecticut. Next, Connecticut's railways have helped shape the history of our state. But for generations, we've paid them lip service without committing to the kinds of improvements that they need to remain not just usable, but a dynamic part of our economy. A recommitment to rail can help reinvigorate communities throughout the state, encouraging transit-oriented development that would include new housing, new retail, and new office space. The 5-year ramp-up in my capital budget includes funding to finish design and construction for train stations up and down the New Haven-Hartford-Springfield line. We can finally bring commuter rail service to Enfield, to West Hartford, to Newington, to North Haven, and to Hamden. And we can reconstruct stations in Windsor and Windsor Locks as well. We've also included funding to finish what we started several years ago, double-tracking the entire rail line from New Haven to Springfield. Federal funds. Good. Federal funds have only gotten us to Windsor. Now the state needs to step up and close the remaining gap. Double tracking will allow more frequent and faster service and open up the possibility of new routes to Boston and Montreal. On the New Haven line, the busiest commuter rail line in the country, we'll build the Barnum Station in Bridgeport. We'll reconstruct the Merritt 7 station in Norwalk and begin a new station in Orange. Over time, we'll turn this New Haven line into a modern rail service. with reliable and frequent stops, as well as express regional service riders can count on. In the city of New Haven, we've included funding to complete a new parking garage along with a pedestrian bridge connecting it to the station platforms. The new garage will mean expanded ridership and further development of the area surrounding Union Station. We've spoken about this garage for years. Now we're going to get it done. We'll also continue our commitment to replacing the Walk Bridge in order to prevent future disruptions to the New Haven Line and the Northeast Corridor. While carrying out that massive project, we can simultaneously invest in repairs to the Saga and the Kaskab movable bridges in order to keep commuters moving and to prevent our economy from being hurt by travel disruptions. And finally, on the rail, we've taken steps over the past year to make improvements to the 27-mile Waterbury branch. We'll continue this work with additional design funds and $70 million for a complete build-out of a new signal system. This project will allow for increased capacity and more frequent service. The additional ridership will help communities throughout the Naugatuck Valley revitalize their downtowns as well. Now let's talk about buses. Public buses in Connecticut provide our residents more than 40 million individual trips each year. By offering expanded service and better experience, we can increase ridership even further, resulting in fewer cars on our highways and less pollution in our air. My budget includes funding for a study of new and alternative routes that will benefit parts of our state that don't currently have sufficient service. This expansion will help connect more residents to employment centers, opening up new job opportunities for their citizens. But we can't just study the problem. We need to start fixing it. This budget includes significant funding to purchase additional equipment to be used on these new and extended routes. We've talked about highways, buses, and rail, but the transportation vision I offer you today goes deeper than that. It reaches down to the local level with the potential to help every city and town in our state. First, there is an existing backlog of routine bridge upgrades that we've let grow for too long. My five-year plan adds new funding on an ongoing basis to expedite this work and help towns throughout Connecticut fix their bridges. We've also heard from cyclists who say that they want safe alternatives to riding with traffic and pedestrians who want more sidewalks and safer crosswalks in their communities. To that end, I am proposing the creation of a new program to help cities and towns install bike and pedestrian safety improvements in urban areas and town centers. These changes will help make our downtowns safer, more walkable, and more livable. We can also improve on Connecticut's many great walking trails. This budget not only provides funding for repairing existing trails that have fallen into disrepair, it also funds an accelerated completion of new bike and pedestrian trails across our state. All of the projects I've just described, and many, many more, are included as part of our five-year ramp-up. We can begin moving all of them with this capital budget, the budget that I have submitted to you today. Of course, the key word here is begin. That's what this is. That's what this budget proposes to do, a beginning. If we want to transform our infrastructure over the next 30 years, it will require additional decisions on how we're going to pay for it. I want to propose to you now a three-step plan to responsibly begin that conversation. Step one is the five-year ramp-up I've just laid out. It includes more than $2.8 billion in new capital funding, part of a $10 billion transportation plan for the next 5 years. It allows us to get started on all of the projects I've spoken about today, projects that reach every corner of our state and utilize every major mode of transportation. Step two is something that we spoke about last month. If we're going to plan for the long term, Connecticut needs a strong transportation lockbox that ensures every dollar raised for transportation is spent on transportation. I'm glad to see that that proposal has met with bipartisan support. I look forward to signing the law when you enact it. Step three is determining the most prudent and cost-effective way to continue funding our transportation needs beyond the initial five-year ramp-up. To that end, I will form a nonpartisan commission comprised of experts in transportation, finance, and economic development from throughout Connecticut. They will have a single, narrow goal, offering recommendations for a sustainable structure to fund transportation over the next 30 years and beyond. I will announce the members of this new body in the weeks ahead after I have consulted with your leaders, the leaders of your caucuses. Taking these three critical steps is the responsible way for us to move forward together this session. It will allow us to develop comprehensive solutions for meeting our transportation needs. We cannot take a piecemeal approach to this problem. There is no one single answer, and I won't support proposals that only get us part of the way there. As we have this conversation, we also need to make the case to our constituents for why Connecticut needs a best-in-class transportation system. We need to explain what it can mean for them, for their quality of life, for the economic health of their state. So let's get working on this plan. Let's get working. So, my friends, in the weeks and months ahead, we have some big questions to answer together. How to balance our budget and live within our means? How to grow more good jobs with good benefits? How to make sure all of our kids have an opportunity for success? How to reform and reintegrate those who run afoul of the law? And how to best connect ourselves to one another and the world beyond our borders? We need to decide what kind of state we want to be, not just tomorrow, but 10, 20, and 30 years from now. Throughout this work, let's remember that our forebears faced these very same questions. They had to decide what kind of Connecticut they were going to leave to us. It's why they founded our capital city and gave us North America's first written constitution. It's why they built great schools and libraries and parks across 169 beautiful cities and towns. It's why they laid down lines of rail connecting us to Boston and New York and beyond, and why they built a parkway that is now an iconic part of Connecticut's landscape. We inherited these things. They were passed down to us, entrusted to us for their safekeeping. And now we carry a sacred obligation to our children and our children's children to make this state an even better place for our having lived in it. This year, this session, let's honor that obligation. Let's preserve local budgets and protect public schools. Let's support our middle class and those seeking to become members of our middle class. Let's build better roads and bridges and railways. Let's make smart decisions today so that together we can build a brighter tomorrow. May God bless you. May God bless the great state of Connecticut.
That's Governor Dan Malloy speaking to the state legislature earlier today as he released the third budget proposal of his administration. Coming up next, we will continue our special edition of WNPR's weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse, with reaction from reporters who've been digging into this budget document. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, Salvatore Pinna is a 52-year-old who moved to Connecticut 20 years ago. He's been living on the streets and living under bridges ever since, one of many chronically homeless people in the state. We're going to meet Sal, and we're going to hear the first in a series of stories by Susan Campbell about homelessness in Connecticut. It's the start of a 100-day challenge in Greater Hartford. Can we end homelessness in 100 days? Some advocates are going to try, and we're going to talk about it on tomorrow's Where We Live. This evening, it's a special edition of our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. We just heard from Governor Daniel Malloy. We heard his entire budget speech where he laid out some of his plans for the state budget for the next 2 years and some of his big transportation plans. Here to discuss this newly proposed budget with us is, as always, Colin McEnroe. He's the host of The Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. Welcome back, Colin.
Good evening, Mr. Dankosky.
Harriet Jones is here. She's WNPR's business editor. Hello there, Harriet.
Hi, John.
And Jeff Cohen, who covers the Capital Region and healthcare in Hartford for us, but he's also been watching transportation today. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John.
Well, first of all, Colin, let me just get your broad take on this budget presentation. When we talked on the Wheelhouse earlier today, we knew a lot of what the governor was going to say. Any big surprises in the presentation of this budget that we've been so anxiously waiting for?
There may be a little surprise just in the fact that he got more applause even than he thought he was going to get for a lot of this. This isn't a budget that has a lot of candy canes anywhere in it for anybody. There really isn't any money, and he's made that clear at the beginning of it. And then in some ways, I was pleased that he talked very affirmatively about second chance legislation. Didn't necessarily know that was going to happen. And his transportation stuff, I thought actually sounded – I didn't think it was a bad speech. I mean, if you accept the fact that, first of all, these are hard times, some of the things he said about our fiscal outlook in the past turned out not to be true, you know, all that Keith Fandiff stuff, if you set that aside for a second – I didn't think it was too bad a speech.
Well, let's get into a little bit of the details here, Harriet. The budget hole that we've been talking about and that we talked with Keith Fandiff about, you know, the governor's administration says it's about $1.1 billion now. Others have been saying it's as high as $1.6 billion. In the end result, he is saying we're going to have to make some cuts. We're going to have to make some difficult choices because, well, now there's a budget hole. He didn't say that during the campaign, but he's saying it now. So what's he going to do about it?
So in the end, you're right, they're preparing for a budget hole in the first year of over $1 billion, in the second year of over $1 billion again. It's somewhat like deja vu all over again. We're kind of like we're back to the beginning of his first term where we were staring this huge budget deficit in the face. So we're wondering how do we get here again. He's planning to more or less share the pain between spending cuts and something he didn't really term as tax increases, but we'll just get to that in a moment. But he did outline that it is going to be painful.
The vast majority of these cuts are choices that under ideal circumstances Connecticut would not have to make. But as our economy continues to recover, tough choices are needed.
And we're saying the economy continues to recover, but not anywhere near as fast as he or Ben Barnes, his budget secretary, have said. So these are some tough choices. What are they, Harriet?
They are, yeah. We're going to see cuts. And a lot of the meat of what the cuts are going to be was actually not in his speech. We heard more of that from Ben Barnes, who, you know, gave an explanation of the budget before the speech. We're going to see cuts to Department of Corrections. There's going to be a closure of one of the prisons in the state. They did not say which one. And that goes hand in hand with that second chance legislation that Colin talked about earlier. There are going to be cuts to DSS, to DEMAS, to many of these agencies that provide services to state residents.
Well, and when we talk about something as big as DSS, Colin, this is like the biggest state agency. It's billions of dollars. And DSS has been undergoing this modernization program over the course of the last couple of years, trying to cut down on the massive, very long wait times that people have to actually get services. I would assume that cuts to DSS means, well, maybe those wait times get longer?
Yeah, I mean, at times like this, when, as Governor Malloy said, he's having to make decisions that he ordinarily wouldn't make under other circumstances, what happens is the really vulnerable populations tend to kind of take it on the nose. I mean, everybody's taking it on the nose, but obviously these people don't have lobbyists at quite the same level as maybe some other constituencies. So, yeah, this is a group of people who are going to see their interactions with state government take an unpleasant turn.
Speaking of vulnerable populations taking it on the nose, one of the cuts to DSS would be cutting the amount of money that the state will – the maximum amount of money the state will pay for a funeral for a person who dies and is indigent. So at the current level, the state pays $1,800 provided you don't have any relatives or an estate that can help you pay that. Under the new plan, the state will only pay up to $1,000. So
that seems like a level of detail that maybe we're not getting with some of these other plans, Jeff. That's fairly detailed, isn't it? How many people does that affect?
I don't know how many people. I suppose I could reverse engineer the math, but I'm not that smart. They say it would save about $1.7 million a year, so $3.4 million over this 2-year budget just by.
How many drifters are we burying here in Connecticut? Is it like a destination now or something?
Well, you know, I mean, if apparently, according to the state, Connecticut is doing it because other states don't do it quite as generously as we do. So we are just leveling the burying playing field.
But this is – and this is what's so interesting, Harry, because there is
terrible.
There is an
– very depressing.
In a budget speech like this, there is some level of specificity that comes out, things that we say that we're going to do. And we're going to talk about transportation expenditures in just a moment. But then there's also things that just get a little glossed over. So there's always this mix of things that maybe might save us $3 million but – target a very specific part of the population, then other things we'll just sort of figure out later on.
Yeah, and there are broader things that do affect a much wider range of people. I mean, there's going to be cuts to the way that home care is reimbursed for elderly people. More people are going to be moved off Medicaid. There are going to be cuts to Medicaid reimbursement. So there's all that nitty-gritty detail that really doesn't make it into the speech. But once you go through the budget, you see where the cuts are going to fall.
We're talking with Harriet Jones, who's our business editor, Jeff Cohen, who's our reporter, who's covering the transportation part of Governor Malloy's speech today, and Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. It's a special edition of The Wheelhouse here on this Wednesday. We've just listened to the governor's budget speech, where he lays out some of his priorities. And some of his big priorities, Jeff, of course, in transportation. With all the bad times we're talking about and all the stuff that's got to happen right now that's shared sacrifice, he also spent a big chunk of the speech talking about what he plans to do, not just now, but for the next 30 years in the state of Connecticut in terms of transportation.
That's right. And what he says, though, is keep in mind that everything he's proposing is just a beginning.
Of course, the key word here is begin. That's what this is. That's what this budget proposes to do, a beginning.
We were making fun of him taking bottles of liquor to some of the various media outlets. We had a drinking game going in the newsroom, Jeff, not with real liquor, but almost every time he said begin, it was time to take a shot because he said it over and over again.
He did. This gets us started was a phrase he used. This starts us on the way, that sort of stuff. That said, these are his words, not mine. Their press release calls this transportation plan called Let's Go CT, historic, bold, and transformational. So what's it do? They want to talk about candy. You said there are no candy cans anywhere in here. And I don't know that this necessarily counts because a lot of these things that we're talking about are fundamentally broken,
yeah.
Like the I-84 viaduct in Hartford. But if you go through here, we're talking about transportation projects in Hartford, the Charter Oak Bridge again in Hartford, upgrading Route 9 in Middletown, widening 95 in Bridgeport and Greenwich, another change in Norwalk, Old Saybrook, New London, Groton, New London. So these are also expanding the busway to Manchester. So these are – this is the new busway. These are all new projects that are probably still a lot of in the design phase.
Yeah. I mean I don't count things as candy canes that I won't get to eat before I die and I'm buried in one of those potter's fields.
be so a lousy candy cane.
The viaduct, you know, is – I mean to talk about the viaduct like that's – like a deliverable is looking way, way down the – you should pardon the expression – road.
But here's the thing, and this plays to the politics of it, Colin. You said that he maybe got a little bit more applause during this speech than we normally would have thought during a tough budget year speech. When he was laying out this list of transportation candy canes, you heard whoops from the audience. Different people are saying, yeah, we're going to take on Route 9 in Middletown. Yeah, we're going to finish the road to nowhere on Route 11.
But it's sort of like you're in Vegas. And anybody here from Cleveland, you know, so if you say Route 7 in Norwalk, some people applaud because they're legislators from Norwalk, and you just mentioned it might be pie in the sky and might be a decade away, but you did actually mention their town.
Well look, Harry, you covered one of his press conferences early on in this whole thing about the Gold Star Bridge. And he was saying then, you know, we got to do this, but we just don't know how we're going to pay for it, right? And he's still not exactly saying how we're going to pay for all of this stuff.
Yeah, and it really is a horrifying amount of money when you look at it. I mean, the Gold Star itself, I think just one of the carriageways needs $200 million worth of work just to make it safe,
yeah.
Which as a person who travels over the Gold Star, you know, many days of the week is kind of frightening. So that's just one – that's one bridge in the state. So, you know, he often says we don't yet know how we're going to pay for this. This is a conversation we need to have. We'll see, you know, what the appetite is in the legislature this session for how it's going to be paid for.
And to that point, Ben Barnes, his budget director, when asked in the press conference, you know, how are we going to pay for it, he had this to say.
I mean, I can tell you what the universe of potentials are. I mean, it's tolls or sales taxes or other kinds of user fees or income taxes or general fund transfer or property taxes or excise taxes. I mean, there are only so many taxes out there. But we are looking forward to having a discussion about what the best source of those revenues will be. One thing I will tell you is that I have not seen viable tolling proposals that would raise sufficient revenue to support this program.
I'll just say we're all laughing at that. He should have had a list of all the different types of taxes that you can levy on people.
I think that's what that was.
To try to pay for transportation.
And I think it kind of mirrors – I mean if there's – my criticism, I guess, of the transportation proposal itself is it's kind of like that too. If you name everything, you've effectively not named anything. And I think it might be kind of fair to say when you look at what he said talking about transportation, if you, the detail in which he goes into roads – and bridges and rail and buses and bike paths and hiking trails. And it's – I mean he's committed to everything, which is I think ultimately to have a vision you have to prioritize more than I've seen that. Now if you parse this a little bit, you sort of say, well, for car transportation, he's really talking about fixing things that are essentially broken. He doesn't really have a new future vision for auto transportation. His future vision really is in these other sectors. But there is a little bit of this being just kind of like the universe of taxes, which is a very disturbing concept, the Ben Barnes universe of taxes. Well, this is sort of the Dan Malloy / Redeker universe of transportation.
Okay, but one thing that we did get out of Ben Barnes there is of all the various ways we're going to pay for all this stuff with all these taxes, tolls, that's not going to take care of it entirely.
That's right. And that was interpreted differently by the people who were there if you follow them on social media on Twitter. Some of the reporters in the room said that would mean no tolls, but it didn't sound like that's what he said. It's just that tolls alone won't
there's
be enough
no way
to pay
just
for
tolls
$6 billion
no.
worth of capital improvements.
No, it's tolls plus a lot of other stuff.
A car.
Well, look, and before we run out of time there.
No, it's to be tolls and burying dead people.
whenever we end up with a budget speech, I mean, one thing that's not going to be there is specifics about how we're going to raise this money. Are we going to have certain tax increases? We've had conversations.
No. They're not tax increases.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I misspeak?
There are extensions and modifications.
Ah, extensions and modifications. Is that like to my hair? What does that mean?
Yeah. So half of this, budget hole is going to be filled with spending cuts, and half of it is with revenue increases. They're going to garner more revenue, but they're not going to increase taxes.
They're going to garner more revenue, not increase taxes, and that's essentially how we're going to pay to fill this hole. It's not how we're going to pay for all this transportation stuff.
Oh, no. This is just the hole we're looking at right now. But, things like the sales tax, we've heard a lot about how he's going to decrease the sales tax. But, in fact, with the exemptions he's now taking away, there's going to be more revenue generated by the sales tax. Similarly, the earned income tax credit increase is going to be postponed, things like that. The hospital tax is going to be updated with new data, again garnering more revenue. So
more taxes going to the hospitals, potentially more tax increases in a different way coming to us.
Right. So the governor campaigned on I'm not going to raise taxes. But the way that he's done it in this budget is by modifying the tax code so that the state does, in fact, get more tax revenue.
Okay. Well, Colin, we just have 30 seconds left. This all makes perfect sense to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the language of budgets is sort of the language of Lewis Carroll, right? It seems as though words mean different things. They are assigned different meanings. And we went through this a little bit in the morning show, too. I mean, what Harriet is talking about, I mean, actually, it makes a lot more sense when Harriet says it than when Governor Malloy says it. But we understand that basically there's no way to give us anything because there's just no flexibility to do that.
Oh, look, I've voted for Harriet for governor for the last 10 years now.
Not doing it.
We'll just see what happens. Colin McEnroe is the host of The Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. Thanks also to our reporters, Harriet Jones and Jeff Cohen. Tucker Ives produces The Wheelhouse. Executive producer is Katie Tolarski. I'm John Dankowski. This is Where We Live.